Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to this evening's edition of the International Black Summit. And tonight we are having an interview with Summit Leadership. I'm your host, Lenar. And before we get started, I am wishing a congratulations to one of our leadership, and he is a person who has attended the very first International Black Summit that was ever held back in Atlanta, Georgia in 1991. He's a proud grandfather. Congratulations. His son had a daughter on New Year's Day, January 1st, 2008. Congratulations goes out to you. The other thing I'd like to let our International Black Summit leadership remind them of is this week, Tuesday, January 15th, marks the end of the early bird registration. So get yourself on over to the website, www.blacksummit.org, and register to take advantage of those low, low rates. This year's summit, as many of you know, is going to be held on the beautiful island of Anguilla, British West Indies. And without further ado, I'd like to get us talking with our guest, a friend of mine. Her name is Deborah Small, Deborah Peterson Small. She is president, CEO, and founder of Break the Change Organization. She has served as on the coordinating committee, the transition team, and as a facilitator of the conversation of the International Black Summit. Good evening, my friend Deborah.
Good evening, Lenar. How are you?
I am doing great. I'm so happy that you are here with us this evening. You folks, you have no idea what a treat you have in store for you. This woman is phenomenal. She has a brilliant mind. She is a fabulous orator. She is a fierce debater. She's just a wonderfully poised woman. She's beautiful inside and out. She's a mother, not a grandmother yet. I don't know what else to say about you. Deborah, what more would you like to say by way of introducing yourself?
No, that's way more than enough. But, Lenar, before we get started, I have to ask you, who was it who became a grandfather?
Orrin. Oh, I didn't say Orrin Saunders. Okay, thank you.
Oh, no, that's good, because I was listening, and I'm like, I'm wanting to know who it is, so that's great to know. And I think he said it was Jermaine who became a father.
Right. Well, he only has two children. I thought I did say Jermaine, but yes, you're absolutely correct. For those of you, if I was remiss in giving out that information, Orrin Saunders, one of the people who, helped source that first forum, first summit in Atlanta, Georgia. He's also part of the leadership. His son, Juman, who was also one of the youth facilitators, is now a father, and Orrin is a proud grandfather as of January 1st. Okay, and thank you for asking, Deborah.
No, I think that that's just wonderful. And I just wanted to add a note on the early bird registration, that's actually available to everyone in the summit body and anyone who's ever attended a prerequisite. So we would hope that whoever's listening and is even thinking about coming to this year's event in Anguilla, which is going to be wonderful and fabulous, I know, should definitely take advantage of the opportunity to register at an early bird rate. And what better day to do it than on Dr. King's birthday?
That is great. Thank you for that, Deborah. And for those of you who have never attended a summit and have not attended a prerequisite, go to our website, www.blacksummit.org, and find out about, how you can take a prerequisite in your area. I encourage you to do that, because as Deborah said, it would be a great opportunity. I found it very helpful in my life, and Deborah, at we're going to have a conversation about the ways in which, you know, the summit has impacted her life. So is there more for you, Deborah, before I, you know, get into the question and answer part?
No. I just thought that would be good to put in as we were getting started.
You're absolutely right, and it was fabulous. So I know, Deborah, many of our listeners may not, that your first summit was in 1995. So one of the things I'd like to know from you is what was it that drew you to the International Black Summit? What was it that you heard or saw that had you begin your participation?
It's like I had already been in the conversation for a while, and what had me be at the event in 1995 was the fact that it was in New York. So it was like convenient and easy to get to. And, you know, it's funny because there are things that you do that you go into because it's convenient and it provides you with an opportunity to do something different. And then when you're there, you find that what's there is a lot different than what you expected. So, I mean, I initially went to the event in 95 because it was in New York and was relatively easy to do, even though I had been in conversations with people about the summit since 93, the year of Highland Park. And then after that, my commitment was to be at the event as often as possible, wherever it was. And I think that that's true, that's an experience that a lot of people have, that they may come the first time because it's close to them and easy to do, but then after that they go no matter where it is, whether it's near or far.
Well, so speak on that. So it occurs to me that there's something that occurs in that weekend, because the summit is, it actually begins on a Thursday evening for our welcoming, the opening event or ceremony, and then Friday, Saturday, and half day Sunday is when the actual work or, you know, the actual process, the event takes place. So what occurred, if you can share with us, what occurred for you during that first session that had you want to continue to come and continue to, well, I won't say continue to participate, we'll get into that a bit later, but at least had you attending those first few years?
I mean, I think for myself, I can't speak for other people. It's a dual thing. I mean, part of it is the opportunity and experience of being with so many other black people in a positive space with energy that's self-reinforcing and self-empowering and group empowering, which, you know, regardless of whether or not you live in a community with a lot of black people or not, is not an experience that people have in general, black or white, because we don't live in a society that really maximizes that. So I think the very physical and emotional experience of being in the summit space for those days is a very unique one for people. In the same way that, you know, for those people who participated in the Landmark Forum or other courses like that have had that experience. But I think the other part of it for myself that's had it be something that's become an integral part of my life is that it's really provided me with a space for self-examination in a way that promotes self-growth. And because of the things that I do and the commitments that I have, I really have been able to see the relationship between expanding myself and expanding my ability to be effective in my work and in my life and in my interactions with others. And the summit space is really the place where I find the tools for that, where I find the freedom to engage in that inquiry in an even deeper level with people who have the same commitment to that and to me, and a place that one can do it safely. you know, without worrying about any of the things that you do or share being used against you, coming back to haunt you, or showing up in your life in a negative way. And again, you know, we live in a world that doesn't really provide that many real safe spaces for people. So the opportunity to have that and to have that in the space of other people who have similar commitments and similar goals is wonderful. And then, you know, to top it all off, it's fun. You know, with like the cherry on top, you know, is that you get to do all of that and to really have a good time. And so, you know, all
so
of that.
So, W, you're fading out.
I said, to me, all of that is very addictive. And I think for almost anyone to have all of those experiences in one place at the same time is something that almost anyone would want to repeat as often as possible.
So let me see if I got this for our listeners. What I heard you say, that it was fun, that it was an opportunity for self-exploration in with people of Black African descent, that the information that you shared was confidential, so it was a safe space. And I don't know that you exactly said this, but I got a sense of empowerment. Oh, and you also got tools, I heard you say that you use in what you do in life. Is that a pretty accurate summary?
Pretty much.
What would you add?
Well, the only part that I would probably adjust is the Black African descent part. I think I said African descent. I don't know if I said Black African descent. And I think that that's one of the aspects of the summit space that's been an evolving conversation, that's been a good evolving conversation for us and for the world.
Yes, and up to this point, who's been there is people of Black African descent. That's all I was
primarily.
Right.
Well, primarily because there have been summits where that's not been true.
Well, you know, I disagree with that, and we'll have that part of this on another. So what I was noticing is that the year that you came into the summit, the question was, who am I in relationship to being life as transition?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, again, was there anything, in addition to what you mentioned, was there anything in that discussion that you recall or was a highlight for you of that weekend?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, I mean, watching the facilitators in front of the room wrestle with that question as they talked about what was going on in their lives personally was
mm-hmm.
just such a great opportunity, because it was very unusual, at least for me, to see people use themselves in that way to the goal of providing a contribution for others. So that was the first thing. And then I was personally in a space of transition in my own life, kind of looking at what was going to be the next direction in my career and in my personal life, and really like trying to get a sense of what direction, you know, life really wanted me to go in. And so the summit space was a perfect space for me to begin working those things out. And in the conversations that I had with people and in the various inquiries in the facilitator body, I really got to choose very powerfully who I wanted to be in the world, how I wanted to show up, what things I wanted to have. And over the years, have been able to really create a space for career that I find quite rewarding personally, and that's a good match for my talents and passions, and where I really get a sense of my ability to make a difference, which is all of what I said that I wanted, that went from being a want to a have.
That is great. And would you share with us some of that? What you said is who you wanted to be, how you would show up in the world. These were, you know, the inquiries that you were in at that point, and the direction that you wanted to have your career. So what were some of those, or is that what you're living now?
Well,
that evolved?
For one thing, I originally joined the coordinating committee because I wanted to learn how to be a leader by serving, you know,
that is great.
Which was a different space for me to be in around leadership.
Yes.
And so I took on, you know, being on the committee as the person who was the administrator, which meant my job was to record, you know, all the minutes and take notes and support the coordinator and the finance people and, you know, basically be a scribe. And it was funny because at the time I took that on, I didn't even have my own computer at home and didn't know a whole lot about how to use them because I had always had a secretary at work who did that. Mm-hmm. So it was wonderful because I had to learn from scratch how to do all of these things in order to fulfill my role. And in doing that, I not only learned how to serve, but I acquired skills that were very useful for me professionally. And I think, you know, broadened myself in a lot of ways that, you know, I'm still seeing manifest and showing up. You know, not to mention the fact that it's, you know, it was just at the beginning of sort of the PC revolution, where so much of our lives now is dominated by our ability to really use computers. So the fact that I was taking on learning them and developing some mastery at that point, you know, has only benefited me as they've become a more essential part of our everyday activities.
So for those who are listening who don't know, our coordinating committee of the International Black Summit was, at that time, was our leadership body that took on the accountabilities for the day-to-day operation of the International Black Summit. There was a head, the international coordinator. There was an international enrollment manager who took care of keep going out, making sure there were events happening, that the word was being spread, that the information was being given out. There was an international registrar who, when someone said, yes, I want to attend this event, you know, took care of that information, handled the monies, kept track of that, that part of it. And then there was a financial person who actually put the monies in the bank and dispersed funds. What else do we have? As you said, the administrator, which Deborah took the minutes, and those minutes had to be sent out, whatever mailings there were, the information to the larger body. And what always, and I still love about the summit, is that the leadership did not dictate and does not dictate to the body. The body, the leadership may make recommendations. The body is what chooses the direction we go, and the leadership carries it out. So that's, you know, been transformational for me and inspiring for me, and why I continue. One of the reasons I continue to participate. So, and how many years were you on the coordinating committee, Deborah?
Oh, gosh. I think altogether at least four.
And the reason I'm asking and kind of chuckling is because I remember, like, after the first year or the second year for sure, I remember that the conversation, because we get to choose, like, every year unless we say we're going to take on this accountability for 2 years or however many years, that you were saying, I'm not doing this anymore, you know, I've had enough of this, blah, blah, blah. Do you recall any of that?
Yes, I know. I love how folks love to, like, remind you of things that you've quietly tucked into the recesses of your mind.
No, and here's the reason I
took on one more. No, I know. I'm laughing, but
I'm bringing it up because I want people to get, you know, that even though we may be in this transformational setting where people's lives have changed and they're living in the realm of possibility, the stuff still comes up. You know, the no, I don't want to do this, I don't want to be on another call, I don't want to attend another meeting. And there is that commitment, at least for me, my commitment to my growth that and my unfoldment, you know, keeps me in this conversation. And so I just, you know, just wanted to point out that it's not all like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this for 4 years. No, it's not like that for many of us. For many of us. And then, even with all of that, you took a little hiatus from the leadership in that way, and then you came back on the transition team.
Well, you know, it's funny because I really think my experience is that almost everybody who's participated in the facilitator body and the planning body has been part of IBS leadership at some point. You know, it's one of the things I think that's really unique about the organization is that we don't really have sort of the clear distinction, leadership versus membership. Kind of the way that leadership or the way that work flows, because we are a volunteer organization, is that everyone at some point takes on their period of holding that space for some part of the work that is part of managing the business and the conversation of the International Black Summit. And because of that, I think that there's a much greater appreciation for the kinds of sacrifices that people make personally and financially and research resource-wise to be able to do that work, because it does take oftentimes a lot of time, and, you know, both in terms of the phone calls and the actual physical stuff of the work. And so I think that we have a much greater amount of appreciation for each other around our willingness to do that, and the ability and the willingness to support people when they're trying, when they've taken on that type of work, which is also unique, because you have lots of organizations where you have a lot of members, quite frankly, who don't do that much and who leave it to a small group of people to do most of the work. But, you know, we're a small group of people where almost everyone does something that's important to keep it going.
And but one of the things you were saying about, you know, taking on that those accountabilities, what I know, at least for me, it was a little different than it was different than being facilitator, and yet some of the most rapid, I think, growth that I had in my life was serving on the coordinating committee. How did that, as far as if you are looking at your growth tracking, that how does that occur for you?
I think it's kind of how can I put it? So it's like whether you want to do, you know, growth regular, or if you want to do it like at warp speed, you know. So, you know, putting yourself on the coordinating committee is like just agreeing to be doing it on warp speed, at least for that period of time. And it's really interesting because at first I thought it was about the people, but after watching over time, you can really see that it's something about the space that, you know, when you put yourself in that space, life uses you in a way that you didn't anticipate, that has whatever it is that you've taken on trying to work through in your life, you know, really come up for you strong and really requiring you to have to be a commitment to your growth, like quickly, like now, not later, not slowly, but like now. And when I think about the year that, you know, I took on being coordinator, which was the year we went to Ghana, it was like such a classic example of that. But
Say more about that, please.
Well, I'll come back to that, but I just wanted to finish this the question by saying being in the facilitator body is also a commitment to accelerated growth, but in a different way, in that in some ways part of growing in the facilitator body is because it's so much self-generated, it doesn't really have to be warp speed, because you kind of have a greater amount of choice, I think, in the pace at which you're going to address some of the things that are coming up for you, you know. And there's just something about being in one of these other doing spaces that doesn't give you that quite that same level of choice. But it is an opportunity for accelerating your rate of growth, and I think that it's one of the things that attracts people to both of those spaces and has them continue to take them on. I know it's what had me continue to stay both on the coordinating committee for multiple years and in the facilitator body for many, many years, because in spite of whatever challenges that I had to face and personal difficulties, being in that space provided something for me that enabled me to get through it in a way that I wouldn't have without it. And it's always been really clear for me, not always in the moment, but always in hindsight and relatively quickly in hindsight, that that's true. And I know that I'm not the only one who feels that way. And so it's like, on one hand, you're volunteering, but you're volunteering for something that actually provides something back for you that, at least for me, has always been worth more to me than the amount of time that I've had to invest in doing the work or holding the space.
So, so now I'd like for you to, like, reiterate, because it's piggybacking on what you just said about the experience for Ghana. Speak to that, please.
Well, you know, Ghana was the year that that, you know, life, it, again, it's like you can work to try to work, have things work smoothly. And in the summer space, most of the time, things rarely do because it's a reflection of how life is in general. And that year, and any time we're doing an event abroad, there's always the logistical challenge of trying to manage something in a space where we're not. So given that, you know, that which is always a challenge anyway, Orin and I actually went over early to prepare, and like the week that the majority of the folks were supposed to be traveling from the U.S. and Canada to Ghana, the airline that was supposed to bring them over had their license suspended.
That was so Ghana Air, right, in 2004.
That was Ghana Air, yes. And so, you know, people were stuck at the airport in Baltimore and in New York, and for some folks they were trying to get from California to the East Coast, trying to get a flight into Ghana when Ghana Air was not authorized to bring anyone from the U.S. over to Ghana. And
right.
We were in Ghana seeing people unable to get out of the country to go back and worried that none of the folks were going to be able to make it over. And in the meantime, we had people in Ghana who had registered for the summit, so we knew we had to deliver it whether anyone else came or not. And, you know, we had contracted for all of this space and didn't know if people were going to make it to fill up the room. I mean, it was just really, you know, again, one of those places where you could look at it at breakdown, and, you know, where, you know, another continent away without easy. This is not in the days where everyone had international phone cell phones, and we didn't have Skype, so trying to call people back home and find out what was going on was really difficult. But as it turned out, it was a real example of the miracle of the summit, because the participants coming from the U.S. and Canada who were stuck at the airport were so committed to being there that they convinced the airline officials to bring them over.
That's right. And not only summit participants, there were other people there who were able to make their way to Ghana because the International Black Summit Group was there. I so wish Chikesha was here to share some of that conversation, but she's completing up her weekend class at the University of Santa Monica master's program. So she's not
with us. It was really beautiful, and it was a year of firsts in many ways. It was the first year that we had more youth participants than adult participants, because we had so many young people from Ghana who came to the event, including mm-hmm. one young man who walked by himself for over 10 miles to get to the summit event without knowing, you know, what was going to happen when he got there or where he was going to stay or anything. It was the year that, you know, we went to had our opening event at the old slave forts in Elmina and felt the spirits of all of our ancestors who had been held there before they were shipped off to be sold as slaves. And it was so, there were just so many things about that year that were, at least for me, transformational, mm-hmm. you know, that it was almost like the experience that people went through to get there had to be that way, because it was a mirror of the experience that our people went through coming from there, you know? And so
right.
it was just another opportunity to see how everything can be perfect, even when it doesn't look that way.
And, you know, as I'm listening to you, I can recall that just as that you experienced it that way for Ghana, each year there is a group or a people who have that very same conversation about how miraculous it was, the things that they go through to, you know, to get to the summit. You know, that one year the summit was in Memphis, and in 2001, and I had decided to drive. Was the year that that bad storm came and flooded out my basement here. You know, so so we were down there frantically. I was removing, you know, things to dry out the basement, and thank God my parents happened to be here at that time that year, because a lot of times they've already gone home. But, you know, as it turned out, it worked, and I was able to make it there and had to leave because a friend of mine was being ordained that Saturday, and it was close enough, though, that I could drive there and then make it back to the session. So there are, you know, that's my story. And there are many, many other stories of hotel rooms, you know, people sharing because different things happen and flights, and you're right. It's just a fabulous and miraculous energy. Definitely. I wanted, well, first off, for those of you who are listening in, this is the International Black Summit interview with the leadership. And our guest this evening is Deborah Small, who has been with the International Black Summit since 1995. She jumped right in, became a part of the coordinating committee, then shortly thereafter, or maybe at the same time, I believe, became part of the facilitator body. So she's been in the leadership body almost since the moment she came to the International Black Summit. And where I'd like to go now is just a few more minutes interview, and then we'll invite people to come on who may want to wish you well and have questions for you. But what I'd like to talk about now, Deborah, is how you may be using some of these distinctions in your life. Because what you said is when you came in 1995, you were in a transitional space in your own life. You looked at who you were going to be, how you were going to be in the world, show up in the world, and a way, because you were a lawyer, and we haven't talked about that. You were a practicing and successful attorney, and you've moved from that and, you know, into your social activism, which you've been in. And I speak with you all the time, so I'm aware of how you use the distinctions in your work, and I'd like for you to share some of that with our listeners.
Well, you know, again, it's interesting because I would say that one of the things that the summit really helped me do was to move from a very head-oriented space to a more heart-oriented space, which had always been there, but which I didn't have the same amount of facility to express. And in moving into that space and allowing myself to express it more fully, I really got clear about how I wanted to spend my time and energies and use myself, you know. And, you know, one of the things that I learned in the summit was to ask for what I wanted. And so initially at each space, at each juncture, it was more like, well, I want to be able to do this kind of work, you know, in this kind of a place, doing this kind of thing. And lo and behold, the opportunity presented itself. And I really found that what I wanted to do and enjoy doing is the kind of work that brought me to the Lord in the first place, which was focusing on ways to address many of the problems that are plaguing poor communities, particularly poor Black and Brown communities. And because I've always kind of been a champion of the underdog and like the challenges, I really found doing work around criminal justice reform quite compelling because it's an area where our community is affected in ways that rival almost any other community in this country except for the Native American community is the only one that is incarcerated at the same rate as African American and then the Latino communities. And when you start looking at it, many of the reasons that our folks end up in prison are for offenses and crimes that other groups of people commit at the same rate but without the same punishment. And so one of the things that being in the summit conversation has helped me do is to learn how to listen to people in a way that has me able to communicate both how they feel about things and to create a different space for them to engage in a conversation about how to deal with drugs and crime in the community. I think many of us have, been conditioned to believe that the only way to respond is through punishment and law enforcement. And yet I really do believe that that's a trap that keeps us caught in a continuing cycle of more punishment and more incarceration. And yet the summit has really helped me to understand what it takes to create alignment in a space, how to listen for it, how to be engaged in a group process such that you can have the patience to be with people where they are and to work with them slowly so that they can get to a place of seeing the answer for themselves, not because you've given it to them, but because they're clear, because that's where the alignment is, and to create a space of operating that's not based on anger, but that's actually based on a desire to make a contribution and coming from a place of love. And I think that, unfortunately, there's not enough of that within our political discourse, either on the left or the right. And because I am very political in my orientation and goals, I find the distinctions and conversation at the summit a very useful way to both guide my energies politically and to engage with others in a way that's positive and that actually creates more space for alignment and collaboration as opposed to discord and dissonance. And I'm hoping that as more people begin to look for something different, in terms of how they approach their political engagement, that mm-hmm. our distinctions and things will be more and more useful and used by others.
So I'm thinking of, because we talk all the time, well, not really. We talk, when we talk a long time to make up for all the times we haven't talked in between. But so because
that
Deborah really has a very busy and hectic schedule, and it's always a treat when she and I, at least for me, when we get to have a conversation. So I'm thinking of one, I don't know if you can share this. If you can't, that's fine. I'll move on to the next question. But I'm thinking of this, a meeting that you attended that you were discussing some plans, and you were being told that you couldn't do this. And you were able to, by listening to them and suggesting some things to them, you were able to, reach an alignment with that group. Are you able to talk about that?
I'm trying to remember which one you're talking about because I go to so many meetings. You got to give me another
I was thinking it was plans for a building or plans for...
Oh, yeah. Okay, so one of the things that I do is I chair the board for this drug treatment program based in Harlem called Green Hope Services, and we provide drug treatment for women, both women coming out of prison as well as women from the community. And one of the things we've been wanting to do and have raised money to do is to build a new building, a residential facility that women can have their children with them while they're in treatment. And so the whole process of actually building a building in New York is unbelievably complicated and long. I mean, we've been in this process now for like the past 4 years. And so we're finally at the place where we're negotiating over the last of the construction money and the design for the building. And the agency in New York that actually pays for the base of the building had balked at some of the things that we wanted to do because they thought that it was too good-looking, and as I said, the head of the organization referred to our design as a Cadillac and told us that we needed to be willing to settle for a Chevy, and our attitude was like, number one, this is not a Cadillac, it's what our women deserve, and two, we save the state a lot of money by supporting women and helping them successfully through treatment so that they don't end up in prison again. And secondly, the cost of our building was still less than the city was spending on other projects for other kinds of groups. And so we kind of stood our ground on it and told them that, you know, and if they absolutely refused to pay for it, we said we would raise the money elsewhere, which we did end up doing, raising a significant amount of it. But as it turned out, you know, at the last meeting that we had, we were like maybe $250,000 short. And, you know, they were like, well, we have to do this process they call design engineering, which really means taking stuff out. And so they were like, well, we need to do that again. And we're like, no, we're not doing this again. Y'all are going to find the other $250,000 so that we can, like, start constructing this business, this building. And we were quite clear about it. And left the meeting, you know, committed that that was going to happen. And sure enough, shortly after New Year's, we found that they had agreed to give us the rest of the money and we could move forward with breaking ground. And so hopefully we'll start construction within the next few months, and this time next year the building will be open and doing the business of providing services for women and children in the community. But again, it was interesting because our ED of the building, of the organization, is a minister and a wonderful woman who's normally quite calm and relaxed. But she was so upset at the folks that we were negotiating with. It was the first and only time I've ever seen her really angry. And one of the things, again, that the distinctions, you know, the summer conversation has given me is the ability to kind of really take myself out of what's going on. And you know, in facilitator mode, you're there listening to what's happening in the room and trying to be a clearing for other people to actually get clear. And so in that space, it was easy for me to facilitate a good outcome in our interaction with the agencies that were funding us in the building and not allow the emotion and the upset to take over and derail the process.
And that is, I'm glad you brought that up. That is one of the byproducts that I also experienced having been in the facilitator body, that it really is about listening so that people can hear what it is that they are saying. So what I've just found it very fascinating that you were able to, and that, you know, able to use that for that business meeting to have a fabulous outcome.
Well, for me, that's the whole value of the conversation. I mean, it's great to have a great 4-day event, but it's even greater to have your life work better because you're using these things, you know, 365 days, you know, the other 361 days, not just the 4 days of the summit.
And that's what, for me, that's what makes the difference in participating in the summit, that I actually leave there with tools that I can use in my life to make a difference in it, to make it a lot easier. I don't know that we, I mentioned the name of your organization. Why don't you say that and, you know, just give people a little bit more about your what you are president and CEO and founder of?
Well, I'm actually the executive director.
Okay.
If I'm president and CEO, I could give myself a raise without getting permission from other people. But the organization is called Break the Change, and our goal and mission is to really engage with
you're fading away, come back.
I said our goal and mission is to engage with communities that are most affected by the current war on drugs, and to really get people to look at dealing with substance abuse from a public health perspective as opposed to a criminal justice perspective, so that you wouldn't lock people up for being involved with drugs, but you would actually look at what are the human needs that can be developed that would not have a person be caught up in addiction or involved in drug selling, and to have a standard of justice that applies to everybody. I mean, to me, it's crazy that, you know, people across the country and every socioeconomic group have problems with illegal substances, but the only folks who end up going to prison are poor Black and brown people. But for me, it goes to a broader issue of the way in which we've become attached to punishment as a form of behavior modification in our community. And so the summit has really helped me to develop a deeper understanding of the best ways to actually support people in developing a greater understanding of themselves so that they can create a space in their community that has it work better for them. So our goal is really to be part of that movement of helping people to organize and to engage with each other and the structures that govern their communities so that they can actually create outcomes that are going to be more positive for themselves and successive generations. And our website is www.breakchains.org.
And I was listening, and I was like, well, wait a minute. I know Deborah has, you know, you're a public speaker. You've been on the Tom Joyner Show, if I'm not mistaken. You also facilitated sessions with women's groups. I distinctly remember that. Is that also part of what you do?
No, that's true. I mean, movement building involves a lot of different things. It means engaging in public education. It means speaking out when you can. It means nurturing and mentoring the next generation of leaders. It means helping people on an individual level as well as managing and organizing campaigns around particular issues. And because, you know, I think we're at the very early stages of building a movement around these kinds of issues, you know, you kind of have to be willing to be a Jill of all trades, you know, as far as that goes. So it's one of the reasons why I travel a lot and work a lot, but I really see myself as a person who's building a foundation that I know will be picked up and carried on by others, and that in the future people will look at, you know, drug prohibition the way that we look at alcohol prohibition today. I have no doubt about that. I don't know how long it will take for us to get there, but I can see it quite clearly. And so for me, all there is for me to do is my part in helping us get to that positive outcome.
So we've got minutes left. For those of you who are listening and you'd like to ask Deborah questions about her experience with the summit being a part of the summit leadership body, or her activities with Break Chains, the number is 646-716-9827. And we've had someone on the line. I'm just going to check in with them and see if there's something that they would like to ask. It's caller 619-865. Is there a question or comment you have for Deborah this evening?
Hi, Lynette. This is Sharon Bynum. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Sharon. It's good to hear you this evening. And you too. Are you one of the – I know you were one of the people initially in the facilitator body, even before – before you joined in 91, is that correct, part of the facilitator body?
In 92 in Highland Park through about 95.
Okay. Is there a particular question you have for Deborah? Is there something you'd like to share with her, or a question or comment?
I don't have any questions. I've been enjoying the whole thing and learning for myself and just how I can continue to expand the distinctions and tools in my life. I did have a comment in regards to Ghana.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I was part of those people stranded in Baltimore. And let me tell you, that Wednesday before the summit, we spoke to the airlines and they said they had their license. That Sunday morning, which was the 1st of August, and I remember it well, I was in California to fly out that day to Baltimore, and Shakesha called me and told me they weren't flying out. So I knew before I left California that they weren't flying. Education had already begun the conversation of expansion, and I was standing on her shoulders. And that was a phenomenal year because that was one year that I hadn't really worked, but I was able to travel out the country. So I knew that if God made it possible for me to get the funds to go, that he wouldn't pull the rug out now. And we all got into, like 16 to 20 of us were in Baltimore, one lady in a wheelchair. But it was just phenomenal seeing everyone declare that we would be there. So it was like the perfect demonstration of what you declare into existence. Shakesha saw a conversation for expansion, enrolled the managers in that, and in so doing, it provided a way for not only us to get there, but for all the people who had been stranded for several weeks in Baltimore from Ghana couldn't go. In fact, we were able to bring the people from New York to Baltimore. They put us up overnight, and when we came into the hotel that night, we were supposed to leave that morning. Everyone who had been stranded laughed at us and told us, yeah, right, you're not going anywhere. But at 4 a.m. in the morning, we all took care of each other in an orderly fashion to make sure everyone's provided for, loaded up on that first bus, and you would see the difference and distinctions between order and taking care of people and following through on what we declared would happen versus the chaos that was happening on the other bus. So it was definitely a phenomenal experience, not knowing even after we went to Ghana that you had any guarantee to be back. So it was totally standing and trusting on the distinctions and your belief in the summit and on God.
Well, thank you for that.
And I think one other thing that was a first was we had more men than women at that summit.
That would be a first.
And I think we had, like, 150 kids and 75 people, and, like, over 50% of them were men. Mm. And men that took care of everyone in the summit. So that was phenomenal.
Well, thank you for that, Sharon. I really appreciate that addition to the conversation of that, of Ghana, what happened in Ghana. Like to ask you, since you've been part of the facilitator body, is there, you know, and leadership, is there something you would like to say about being part of the facilitator body, especially since you were one of the, you know, one of the first ones?
Wow, that's a good question. For me, the facilitator body was an experience in which you really do have some of the things, good or bad, about yourself come up. Sometimes it was hard to deal with for myself when you hear the negative because, you know, I want to be liked. I found that as the young facilitator next to the OGs, a lot of my conversations were very similar to Robin's conversation. So even though you might not be the facilitator, I got value through other facilitators' conversations like Robin and being able to move my life forward. It was also a situation where I was engaged, and this was in the Oakland Summit, and that was the end of that relationship. So, you know, you can get clarity on what you want and what you might not need in your life at the same time.
So I'm curious because of what you said about, and this would be my last question, but what you said about Robin, that what you were thinking was very similar to Robin, what she was thinking. Would you give us an example of that?
For
those of you who are listening who may not know, Robin, at the International Black Summit, there were five initial facilitators, at which Sharon has what we lovingly call the OGs, the old guard, the old guys and gals, whatever, Catherine, Robin, Anthony, Perry, and Jay Kenneth. So you were saying that am I understanding that your conversation or your comments were similar to whatever Robin would have said?
Yeah, as Robin used her life, I could see similar things in my life, kind of along the lines of wanting to be liked, wanting to do it right.
And very good.
The way you set your life up to make sure you do it right. So sometimes there's no freedom in that. And those are just a couple of things I can think of off the top of my head.
That was a great example. That was a great example. And so, Deborah, I'd like to bring it back to you, piggybacking on what Sharon said about, you know, Robin was using her life, you know, saying what was happening in her life. In the last couple of minutes remaining, what would you like to say about, you know, what it is, what it's like being a facilitator, and explain a bit more, if you would, about using your life, what Sharon mentioned?
Well, I just want to check and make sure that there's no one else waiting to say anything because we've only got a couple minutes left. So if there
I've clicked on the others and there's not a caller there. So
okay, good.
And thank you for
asking. I mean, I just really think that in a lot of ways, it's like that. There isn't anything to do but use your life. You know, the idea that anything that you do is anything other than that is kind of an artificial distinction. So in a lot of ways, it's more about being present to the reality of the fact that you are using your life and that your life is using you and having more choice about it. I think that the thing that I've gotten the most out of my participation in the summit is freedom, you know, and it's the thing that I see that I have a commitment to helping provide for others is greater degrees of freedom. And the freedom is really in being able to choose in the moment, you know, who you're going to be based on what's happening in the moment, not by the things that have driven you from your past or in always background conversation that you might have about yourself and others. And I think of all the different exercises that we've done over the years in the facilitator body, one of the ones that stands out for me so much and that has provided so much for me is when we really spend time distinguishing, you know, that I am not my mind and that the things that I think are just that. They're what I think. It's not necessarily who I am. And being able to distinguish that has given me so much freedom to just have that be what it is, a conversation, and in the moment to choose what it is that I'm present to or what I want, not driven by whatever conversation is going on in my mind. And it's also given me the freedom to laugh at myself at, you know, the things that do go on in my head and the kind of conversations that I do have, and to see that they're no more or less significant than what I choose to make them. And that, for me, has not only, you know, given me freedom in my own life, but it's given me a lot more compassion and space to be with other people because I can look and see, you know, the same kinds of struggles and things that I go through, other people do too.
Yes, and I liked what you said, both of you, Sharon and Deborah, about the using of your life, because what that points to me very simply is this is not, you know, about theory. It's not about the philosophy. And it's based on some theory and some philosophy because distinctions really are, you know, a way of looking at things. It's a concept, an idea, a philosophy, a way of life. However, what we do as facilitator, what I do as facilitator in the summit, is actually test it out. Let the rubber meet the road. When I am faced with a situation in my life where I'm upset or angry with mother, father, sister, brother, other, you know, I look at the tools and the distinctions that I, you know, engage in the summit and use it in that situation in my life. So that is what I was hearing and what you were saying about using your life. Deborah, since you were so great, you know, and I thank you for being here. We've got a little less than a minute left, I believe. And is there anything, well, first off, what I'd like you to do is, again, please remind people about the way you did about the early bird. That was so great.
Oh, just that, you know, the early bird rate will be in effect until, what, January 15th, I believe?
Correct.
This week, it's this Tuesday, So anyone and everyone who's listening should who's not already registered should definitely go and register and take advantage of the lower rate. And also share the fact that the early bird rate is coming to an end with anyone else that you may know who is intending to be at the summit this year in Anguilla. And I just think it's amazing. And I wanted to also just say that one of the great things about being part of the summit family is having a wonderful relationship with you, Danita, now Lenar, who I've known for a full, 12, almost 13 years.
Yes.
And you and I have had so many different conversations in so many different places in the planet, both using the distinctions and talking about our lives. And it's that ability to have people that you can talk to who have the same language and the same point of reference that also supports growth and freedom. So
I love you too.
For that.
So thank you for being our first guest on Interview with Summit Leadership. It's been a fabulous hour. I'm so glad that you have the time to do that. Sharon, thank you for your comments and for your listening. And that's it, folks. This is a wrap. Have a great week. Remember the early bird, www.blacksummit.org. Good night, everyone.
All right. Good night, Danita.
Good night, y'all.
Good night, Aaron.
Thank you.
Oh, good night.